Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
And I assume you still want Shave of the Sharp to clap.
I think we should all clap.
Okay. Count us down.
3, 2, 1.
I thought it was a single clap.
Oh, I was like, wait, what the fuck was that? We have always done three. Every single episode since the beginning of fucking creation. We have done three claps.
I'm glad we can record that. That's recorded, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. We have to add that somewhere. Should we do it again?
Who you betting on? Always on black, fast stats in the pocket, whole squad, fast cash. Send the bookie, tell him bring it from the bag. Know we coming for the bag.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, to the few in attendance and the thousands listening around the world, let's get ready to gamble. My name is Tony Cavallo, and as always, I'm joined by Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, and Schaefer the Sharp, Drew Schaefer Crooks, and we are the West Coast Gamblers, a proud member of the Evergreen Podcast Network and the only gambling show that makes you money. And this is a special show today, fellas. This is a real good one because for the first time in over 2 years, all three of the West Coast Gamblers are in the same room at the same time recording this podcast. I can see Dangles to my right. I can see Drew from Michigan to my left. Put up the beers, boys. We are having a fun one.
Here. Cheers.
We are here.
We made it.
We made it. It's been a long time. It's been a long time coming. And what better day for us to get together when there is so much to talk about? One of the wildest days in the NFL that you will ever see. It started off with everyone thinking it was going to be Aaron Rodgers' day and everyone discussing what his future might be or what it wouldn't be with the Packers. And it ended up a completely different day. And this is just one day after the news broke that Calvin Ridley would be missing an entire year for betting on his own team
to
win football games. And it's like everyone just kind of, it's like, okay, so we're done talking about Calvin Ridley betting on football games now. There's so much that has been happening. It's great to be in the same room as you guys. Finally, on a day, such an historic day in football.
Absolutely a historic day. And I want to get to Drew why he's here in California first. But I just want to let you know that we are in the same room. We don't have our normal, wonderful studio equipment working right now. If you hear a little bit of audio bugs, it's because Dangles' voice reverberates off these walls like none other, that beautiful bass voice. So just give us some slack on a professionally sounding podcast 99% of the time. We're having some fun today.
Yeah, have you heard some of the podcasts that you listen to, how they're produced?
This is 20 times better than those podcasts. Looking at you, The Athletic. But this is a show about NFL hot topics because we have to cover it. And also, we're going to be giving out a Fast Five, getting back into the world of golf. The Players' Championship takes place this weekend. Going to dive into it, a Schaefer the Sandtrap specialty. And then the rest of the month is all about college basketball and cutting down those nets. But today, a little levity, a little fun, a little breathe easy. Schaefer the Sharp, you're back in California. Welcome back, my friend.
Guys, I'm so glad to be here with you. I just had an excellent meal prepared by Dangles' beautiful wife, and you know, we're in California. Got a little call for a work gig, and might be my last one on the books of the old former life. Thank you, but had to do it. It's good to be here. You know, it's a different world in California, as I'm sure you can imagine, being living in Kalamazoo for the last almost 2 years now, right? Yeah. But good to see your faces, and love being back, visiting, excited to go home and see my family, my child, the young Colt. But, dude, let's talk some football, guys.
Let's talk
some Players' Championship.
This wasn't the plan. This was not the plan to do any football on this show. We were going to let free agency pass us by and do a recap show at the end, even with all the franchise tag news, all that stuff. We were going to let it all happen and do a big show at the end. But so much happened this very morning that we need to talk about it. And Dangles, we should talk about Ridley. We should talk about Russell. But I think we're going to start with my guy, Aaron. Aaron Rodgers.
It was the first news that broke.
Aaron Rodgers coming back to the team. Long rumored. It wasn't as in the 50-50 as it was last year. He's back on the team. One more last dance. Last chance. I get to make all those jokes once again.
God.
Drew, how do you feel about Aaron Rodgers coming back to the NFC North, which has only gotten weaker?
With all due respect, Tony Squares, I don't want to spend a lot of time on Aaron Rodgers right now because I think there's more compelling issues to talk about. I think he was closer to leaving last year, personally. That's just my opinion.
Leaving the team or leaving the NFL?
Leaving the team.
Okay.
You can't potentially leave the NFL when you're a back-to-back MVP winner. And listen, you know, I think you said it best in our text or Tony. We're going to wait to see the details of this contract, $200 million. Obviously, $150-plus guaranteed is a lot of money.
Well, he says those details aren't true. He said himself in a Twitter post that whatever the details that had been reported were not the details of his contract and that he would be playing with the Packers, but he didn't release any. So we don't even know the details of those deals.
So no reason to talk about the contract.
If you believe Aaron, who is a notorious truth fudger.
No, that contract was the one that Green Bay leaked to the press that they offered Aaron, and that's why Schefter ran with it. Rappaport ran with it because those were the numbers that Green Bay said they offered Aaron in the beginning of this whole charade, whatever. But I do think Aaron's coming back on a smaller number deal, but you're not wrong in saying $200 million, $153 million guaranteed was on the table, which is
a lot of money. Yeah, it's basically what we get paid to do this podcast. And also I never thought, Dangles, I'm sure you can chime in here, I never thought there was a chance in hell that the Packers were gonna let him walk. Even his playoff shortcomings, I'm not trying to pick on Tony Squares here, his playoff shortcomings, back-to-back MVPs. He's obviously, you know, a elite quarterback in the twilight of his career. He was going back to Green Bay, and I'm not surprised at all. I'm not surprised.
I mean,
I don't think it's newsworthy. Is what I'm trying to say. I don't think it's a big breaking news. Rodgers going back to the Packers.
Wouldn't they have had to let him walk? It wasn't part of his contract that he had an out after the season?
The contract was changed last year to give him an out after next season. After this 2022 year concluded. Mm-hmm. He was signed past 2023 last year, and that's what they waived to 2022.
I was going to say one more year
under contractual control by Green Bay, but he was due $47 million against the cap.
If he had an out and then took this deal, that obviously says to me that deal was better than anything he was going to probably find somewhere else.
I mean, you are
talking about a 38-year-old guy here who did just win two back-to-back.
The number two ranked quarterback on our QB ranking.
Yes, absolutely, and deservedly so. I think two things can be true. I think you can be questioning whether or not he's actually going to do it for the Packers in the long run, because to this point we've seen that he can't seem to get it done when it matters. Now, you could argue over whether or not this year was a good example of that because the special teams choked that game away against the 49ers.
I don't want to talk about it.
In that divisional game. But we've seen his inability to win when the lights are the most bright. But you could do a lot worse than re-signing the two-time or the back-to-back MVP to your team for another 4 years. But like, are we just assuming that he's going to continue to play at this level? I guess that's the question. I feel like every time we talk about a player playing into almost his 40s, everyone goes, well, Brady did it. Yeah, Brady's the fucking outlier.
Absolutely.
He's not the rule. He's the exception. It's not going to be like there's a million guys that are going to play into their 40s until they're 44 and be winning Super Bowls. And that's just the difference right there. And that's the last thing I'll say is that at 44, Brady is still winning Super Bowls. Aaron Rodgers has won one, and he's 38 years old.
Thank you for reminding me of that fact.
See Big Ben, see the Manning brothers, see Philip Rivers once they reach, 38, 39 years old. But what I want to say, Tony, real quick, and I want to switch subjects because I think there is more compelling topics in the NFL than Aaron Rodgers. But 2 years ago, a lot of controversy. The Packers ruffled the feathers of their two-time MVP by drafting Jordan Love with their first-round pick. Now,
available.
It appears that he's available. So is it safe to say that pick is a little buyer's remorse at this point? A first-round pick on Jordan Love when he's going to play out the duration of his rookie contract while Aaron Rodgers is making $50 million a year.
Okay. You could also say the same thing about the Jimmy Garoppolo draft pick. Was that a buyer's remorse pick when they drafted him? They took a chance. It's not going to work out. They tried to look into the future and look into the crystal ball. It didn't work out. They also, Aaron before that year, was not playing back-to-back MVP levels. He was good. He was fucking Aaron Rodgers, but he was not the best in the world. And that chip on his shoulder kind of brought him there. And I will say, while Jordan Love is available for trade, any GM listening right now, feel free, bring it over. We'd love to send him away. A man that is a team that will not be calling Green Bay is the Denver Broncos.
Wow.
Because no, they made not. A trade today. Two first-round picks this year and next year. Two second-round picks this year and next year. A fifth-round pick next year for Russell, Hustle, and Bustle Wilson is now in the AFC West with Pat Mahomes, Justin Herbert, and Derek Carr. Four quarterbacks in that division all made the top 10 in our QB rankings. And Russell now goes to the Denver Broncos, who had the third best defense in the league last year and now have one of the best quarterbacks in the league and arguably the toughest division in the league. And the NFC, last thing I'll say about Green Bay, got a hell of a lot easier with Brady and Russell leaving that world.
Hell yeah.
But now he's in Denver. Let's talk about Denver first before we talk about RIP Seattle, rest in peace, our first gravestone of the year next year. But Russell's in Denver. I didn't really expect it to happen. I knew he wanted to be out of Seattle, but the fact that Pete Carroll and that organization actually traded the best quarterback to ever play for them, a Super Bowl winner, a guaranteed guy who can win you a game no matter what's happening, on a pretty damn good offensive team that had a lot of shitty things happen to him this year, is insane to me. And did they get enough? Did they get enough for Russell? They got Noah Fant, who's a very good tight end, Drew Lock, who's not a very good quarterback, and Shelby Harris, who's a pretty high-paid defensive lineman, so people respect him enough to pay him that money. And five picks. Was that enough for Russell Wilson? They sold the farm. Denver doesn't care. They're getting Russell. I mean, what's the mindset here?
I think, personally, I think this is a rare trade. A rare trade. Kind of like the Stephon Diggs to the Bills for the Jordan Jefferson draft pick. Justin Jefferson draft pick. That was advantageous to both parties.
Yes, it was.
And I think that this is a trade that is completely advantageous for both parties. And I'll tell you why. The Broncos, holy shit. Like, when Dangles texted us this morning, I was like, oh my God.
You're betting me over again.
four straight here. It's going to be 11.5. I'm going over. But like, it makes sense. I want to listen back to the Schaefer the Sharps quarterback pairings. But like, Russell Wilson on the Broncos makes so much sense. It really does. They have a young, good, talented receiving core. They have two adequate running backs.
I think Javonte Williams is much more than adequate.
They have a top five defense, right? And like, that city embraces that team.
Yes.
Okay. So, God.
There's already a billboard up in Denver.
To get that change of pace, to get that kickstart on a second act of your career, like Russell Wilson, how corny he is, whatever. I just think it's a great trade for the Broncos. On the contrary, you look at the Seahawks. Now, yes, they are trading the best quarterback in franchise history, one that brought them a Super Bowl, and it was a Marshawn Lynch. Sorry, Dangs. 1 yard away from winning another
you
one.
You don't have to be sorry.
Yeah,
we won.
Yeah, but
Malcolm Butler made sure of that.
But for them, if you watched that team last year, something wasn't clicking, and it looked like Russ was on his way out. And I think the haul they got, Tony, for Russ, you mentioned the five picks. You mentioned the players, which I think at this way are throwaways. The headline's not Drew Lock's a Seahawk today, and that won't be the headline moving forward. But now the Seahawks have a top 10 pick. They have this kind of this quarterback class that's a little mysterious. And I think they can really now, they can swing at a quarterback with their draft. Yeah. And I think they really can develop. And again, the question is going to be, how is DK going to react to this, right? How is Tyler Lockett going to react to this? I wouldn't think so. These are world-class receivers. Now they get Russ out of there. We'll see. I like the trade for both parties because I don't think Russ was meant for the long game in Seattle, and I love what the Broncos did. And you said, Tony, I'll end with this. In my head, you look at the AFC now. Mahomes, Allen, Russ, Herbert, Burrow, Carr. Holy shit. I mean, holy shit. Like, good luck getting out of that division. And Mac, Mac.
Forgot about Lamar.
And Lamar. Oh, my God. You know, so if you're in the NFC and you're the Packers, you're signing Rodgers. I mean, beyond Dak, like, who in the NFC is even in that discussion?
It's Dallas, the Rams, and the Packers, period.
And again, I'm just going to kind of play the Stafford card and say, we'll see Stafford running back. I'm curious if he will run back. My odds say he won't, but curious, but wow, what a trade, what a headline.
Dangles, I mean, we can all say as long as Jerry Jeudy doesn't have a foursome, he's going to be in Russ's good side here. But what's up with your Seattle take, your Denver take Russell Wilson, a new man in a new city.
You know, you'd think that, we talk about just our quarterback rankings just having come out. And you know, I had Russ kind of lower, I think, than you guys did and expected. But this is, I mean, to me, this is a move by the Seattle Seahawks that, look, you know, if the Seahawks thought he was a top five quarterback or maybe even a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, he'd probably still be on the Seahawks. They would have kept him.
Russell.
They would have figured it. What's that?
You're still against Russell on this.
No, I'm not against him. I'm glad he got out of there. He wanted out of there. I think it's also telling that the Seahawks, and I kind of go the other way with you here, Drew. I think they might not try and draft. And I think if they're smart, they won't try and draft a quarterback this year.
And go Drew Lock for the year?
Or Geno?
No, or Ryan Geno, or try and go get a guy like Jameis for a year. And ride it for a little bit. Wait until next year when you have maybe a better quarterback crop. Get someone to help out. Because to me, if they really thought that they could, you know, I don't know, why wouldn't they also ask for someone young to supplement in this trade? As opposed to a draft pick, why not go after like a Patrick Surtain or a Bradley Chubb to fill a need that you really have on that young growing team? If you really thought you're gonna draft a quarterback, I mean, either way, whether you draft a quarterback, that team's not built to win now, right? They're not winning next year. They have to know that by trading Russell away. They're not winning next year. I don't know. If I'm them, I'm kind of trying to lean more towards I don't like the quarterback class this year very much. I don't know that I want to roll the dice on the next franchise guy for the Seattle Seahawks after Russell Wilson in a mediocre, like B-tier quarterback class. I might try and get somebody, you know, somebody great. I don't know. I've seen Sauce Gardner going as low as 7. I don't know if he could fall any farther than that. But like, I mean, you know what I mean? Like, they could get themselves somebody they really need. Some offensive line protection would be a good start for them, because that's one of the big reasons why Russ wanted out of Seattle in the first place, was because he was spending half the year on his ass. Or, you know, again, something to help out that defense, because they got a nice young tight end now. We've seen something out of Rashad Penny. Chris Carson's very good when he can stay on the field, and they've got one of the better receiving cores that you'll find out there.
It's going to be interesting.
I will say this. First of all, Dangs, I love Jameis Winston, the Seahawks. I think that's a great, great fit. I really do. That's a fantastic fit. And I know the situation is completely different, so we don't have to spend a lot of time on it. But once upon a time, Peyton Manning was an elite quarterback in the NFL, and he had some serious neck problems, and the Colts went 1-15, wherever they were, and they had the number one pick, and Andrew Luck was the best quarterback generationally to come out in many, many years. And it was this whole thing. I remember that? It was like, they're gonna keep them both, you know?
And everyone knew it. That was the thing. Yeah. Everyone knew Luck was gonna
Luck
be
was
a
going
stud,
to the Colts,
right? There was no question about that.
And what Peyton did, and again, this is different because he was a little older than Russ, maybe a little more, I would say, but honestly, at this point, is his career that much more decorated than Russ at this point, when he went to the Broncos and completely revived his career and had that second act in as a quarterback? And we all know what happened. Won a Super Bowl, had the amazing season where they got beat by the Joe Flacco-led Ravens. But I kind of got reminded of that today when Russ went to the Broncos. Like, that's exactly what Peyton Manning did. Different circumstances. Again, he was injured. They got the number one pick. The Colts kind of valeted him out of there, if you will. But, I mean, look what he did with that change of scenery. So, I think it's a slam dunk for the Broncos. I think Russ is going to be early March, middle of March take. Russ is going to be awesome. Yeah. I think he's going to be awesome. Because last year, he couldn't look disinterested.
Little MVP conversation.
I mean, but the AFC, what's the term? An embarrassment of riches they have at quarterback. An embarrassment of riches.
Yeah.
And so you've still got two guys in that division who've never won a playoff game.
Even the younger ones, like, they got Trevor Lawrence in that conference. You got Mac Jones in that conference. Like, there is a lot going on there. And I will say about the draft quarterbacks, I like Malik Willis a lot more than I see him, but I'm very happy, guys. I have larger hands than Kenny Pickett. I measured it myself.
Congratulations.
I have larger hands than Kenny Pickett. Didn't help me play quarterback, but I got bigger hands, buddy. And as you said, Jameis Winston to Seattle makes a lot of sense. Free agency is coming up. And a guy that was going to hit free agency and was going to make a lot of fucking money is no longer playing in the NFL. And that's because Calvin Ridley went and bet $1,500 on three parlays, a supposed three-team, five-team, and eight-team parlay, one of us, And he got caught because the Genius app or whatever that the NFL uses tracks all the bettors in the world and reports back to the NFL. So if you are an NFL officiated player, official player, coach, whatever, and you bet on an NFL game, you're going to get caught. And Calvin Ridley got the ass end of a deal here by being suspended for the entire calendar year. Again, set to make more money than God in free agency. Arguably the top wide receiver on the market with all these other guys getting franchise tagged. And now he's not playing at all. I understand you have to stop. You have to make a hard line. You cannot bet on NFL games if you are an NFL player. Calvin was away from the team for mental health reasons when he made this bet. He did bet the Falcons to win in there, which is his team that he played for. Do you think it's kosher that they suspended him for a full calendar year for this? Obviously setting an example for the rest of the NFL. Do you think it's unfair to Calvin, or do you think this guy, you know, you shouldn't have done it. You're stupid for even thinking you could, for not giving your buddy $1,500 to bet for you that I might do when Schaefer the Sand Trap is back in Michigan. Don't listen to that, California. But do you think it's fair? Do you think this was a fair move by the NFL to suspend a guy for a whole calendar year?
You know, I think it's very easy today, especially when, because it's, you know, it's so great to put a hot take out there on Twitter and everyone likes it and to be the first one to set it. And that's cool. And that's desirable in society today. But I think what gets lost is that two things can be true at the same time. This can be both what the NFL had to do and the right course of action, because you can't have, you just like, I don't think it's that hard to wrap your head around why you can't have players betting on games regardless of who they're betting on. I will say, you know, Calvin Ridley says he has no inside information or had no inside information on his team. The NFL, it seems like, believed him in his investigation. And I would say, just from a logical standpoint, that tracks, considering you would think if he had inside information, he probably wouldn't have been betting parlays. He probably would have been betting outright or something else.
Or he knew he was going to make $11 million in free agency. He didn't give a fuck about
$1,500. You wouldn't bet $1,500 on parlays if you had inside information on a team to win. So I think we can put any question about that to bed. But I think it's okay to think that this kind of punishment is silly through the lens of looking at the way that the NFL punishes other issues with players off the field when it comes to things like domestic violence. But I also think it's okay to be like, this is what had to happen. And Calvin Ridley seems to understand what he did was wrong and that he's, you know, he obviously lost out on a bunch of money and his actions weren't right. Like, wish there was a different way to get about it? Yeah, because like he shouldn't lose out on playing an entire year of football when Tom Brady got suspended four games for literally doing nothing.
It's life-changing money, and not only that, he's gonna, the next time he signs a contract, we know, we've seen this 1,000 times before, it'll be a one-year prove-it deal. He's not gonna get the money he was offered right now, and unless he comes back to his vengeance like Calvin Ridley can, he may never get this chance again to make a four-year, $20 million a year deal, which is what he was gonna get in free agency this year. He's gonna make like $60 to $80 million. And now it's all gone for a $1,500 bet. Schaefer the Sharp, you're the quote-unquote professional gambler on this show. You've been doing this more than all of us combined. What's your take on this? Is it a fair deal? Do you think you got the hard end of a deal? What's going on?
So my take's interesting, and I listened to a source that I really respect today on a familiar podcast, and I couldn't agree with him more. So, Danglis, you referenced that the stance that NFL takes on off-the-field issues, domestic violence, you know, Ray Rice. People saw that video. His career is done. He was 26 years old, by the way. And I'm not saying he should have played again, but his career was done. 26-year-old, done. Deshaun Watson, he's not convicted of any of these crimes. He didn't play for a whole year. Again, I'm not on either side of the fence on this. I'm just saying the NFL takes a hard stance. But, okay, domestic violence, the Adrian Peters thing with the child abuse, those issues don't affect the outcome of a game. The gambling partners of the NFL, I think they made some like $270 million last year in their first year. You can't be an active player you just can't do it. I think it's black and white. And I don't think there's many things that are black and white, but like you cannot be an active player in any of the major professional sports organizations and bet on sports. It's black and white. So I think the punishment was fair. I don't think it was excessive, but I don't think it was too little. And what I'll say is, unfortunately, with Calvin Ridley, who obviously I've never met, I don't have a relationship with him, I don't know anything about his personal life. I know he took some time off this year to focus on his mental health, so maybe he has some stuff going on between his ears. But a really, really peculiar decision from an IQ standpoint to put your information on a digital platform to wager real dollars in a league that you're currently employed on and getting paychecks from. And I think hopefully, unfortunately, on the expense of Calvin Ridley, I hope this is a good example for players to not do this because, as you referenced, Tony, as someone who's made large bets of major quantities for other people legally, because I'm in the position to do that, I'd be happy to take your bets. I'd be happy to take your bets.
Calvin Ridley, give me a call.
And so for me, when I heard this, I was shocked, but I really thought this is a guy that is maybe just a hardcore degenerate. Maybe he's literally trying to win money, like our friend Pete Rose, friend of the pod. Like maybe he's really trying to like get in some like bet all this money, but for him to bet $1,500 on a couple parlays and actually put his information in Florida on a digital platform is jaw dropping.
It's
me.
Amazing.
It's questionable, but it's all, you know what I mean. It's like it's.
I guess my point is, did he understand what he was doing? Like, it's kind of like.
Well, you could ask the same question about Henry Ruggs, couldn't you? Did he understand what he was? Why would you get behind the wheel of a car?
I don't think that's the same.
I'm not trying to draw a direct equivalency here, but I'm saying that from the point of view of like, if it's like, why would he do it? I would say the same thing about Henry Ruggs. Why in the world, if you are a millionaire athlete, can you not call a car to get yourself home?
Because the NFL and every channel you look at doesn't advertise drink and drive, and it's a good thing to do every second of every day on every television.
No,
screen.
That is true.
In my opinion, the NFL is raking in money after money after money over something that they used to shun. Like they literally spent billions of dollars fighting New Jersey to not have sports gambling legal because they didn't want this. They didn't want it in Vegas. The NFL didn't want sports gambling at all for the longest time. Now the tide has completely turned. More gambling, the better. Partnering with particular teams, a casino in an actual arena. Like, it's just in our lives now, and it's not going anywhere anytime fast. The thing that makes me the maddest is, no, Drew, I agree with you. You cannot bet on games if you're an NFL player. I will absolutely be okay. And if they're tracking this, we know that now they're tracking this. If Drew Schaefer-Crookson puts a bet in there, it goes to the NFL, and they make sure Drew isn't on an NFL team. They're doing that now.
Oh, yeah.
I don't
really, because that's how he got caught.
I don't understand why Calvin Ridley can't make a bet on an NFL game that is not involving the current team he is on. I don't see why that would be a problem. You could say, well, he has a buddy on the Vikings and he knows the Vikings are going to do this on Sunday. We could have a buddy on the Vikings. That doesn't mean we can't make a bet on the Vikings. Like the mother, the family member, they can make bets on the Vikings and the Vikings players can't. I would be fine with a NFL player being allowed to make a bet on a game, in a parlay or whatever that does not involve their team. I'd be A-okay with that because everyone else is getting accepted to do it. And if they're going to draw a hard line stance on that not being allowed, okay. But to suspend this guy for 17 games is the punishment would have been just as dire if they suspended him for half the season. The punishment would have been just as dire if they made it the largest suspension since Josh Gordon, but not a full calendar year. Because once again, it's got to be apples and oranges. This can't be a black and white thing. You got to understand that this guy made a mistake for $1,500 and you're costing him $80 million. He's coming into a free agency year. If he had a secure contract, if he had just signed for whatever and he's gone this team and he's missing a year, that's different. But this guy's about to make more money. This is his life goal. And you're taking it away from him for a $1,500 bet. That to me is too much. And I understand you're making an example of him, but you could have made an example with 8 games just as well.
Only counterpoint to that, Tony. Only counterpoint to that. In the rookie, help me out with this word, Dangs. It starts with an S. Is it called, I'm going to fuck it up. Rookie synopsis,
yeah.
Whatever?
Synopsis, symposium.
Symposium, thank you. Okay. I know this from being on Twitter. They have specific. they have specifically. They have something about getting a car service. They have something about
money management. Yeah,
money management. And they have they pound it into the brains of these athletes coming out of college over and over. You cannot gamble on the outcome of these games. And they have it posted in the locker room. They have it posted in minor league baseball locker rooms. It's just an it's the rule of the fraternity that you are a professional athlete. You are not allowed to engage in gambling if you are a professional athlete. And this is coming from someone who loves gambling more than I would say 99.9% of people.
You're also not allowed to take a banned substance, and that's in the rookie symposium. And yet if you do, it's a 4-game suspension. Like, there's rules in it that this—
Again, but those— Okay, yeah.
They don't affect the outcome of a game. I agree with you. Absolutely. They don't affect the outcome of a game. But to me, this was like such a hard suspension that it's too much.
Because I think the issue, I mean, it might sound simple, but I think the issue is it's a slippery slope. If you let one guy do it, then you have to play arbiter to every single issue that comes up, and not every single issue is going to be this cut and dry where it doesn't seem like he had insider information and he wasn't, you know, trying to leverage something he knew that other people didn't. It seems like, and yes, it was absolutely dumb. And I think that's my point. Like, I think both things can be true. Like remember the sprinter from the U.S., Sha'Carri Richardson, who got suspended from the Olympics because she smoked pot?
It was a
fucking
joke.
Stupidest thing in the world.
Joke.
It's a joke, right? But it's against the rules. It's against the rules. You can't do that. Do I think it's bullshit personally? Absolutely. Do I think she should have been allowed to compete at the Olympics because it's her lifelong dream and because she fucking earned it? Absolutely I do. She should have, but it's against the rules. And if you make, and as a league, as a governing body, if you make an exception for one person, it's like, you know, and this, you hear these kinds of things argued on like the Supreme Court all the time. And the reason they won't overturn certain things is because of that slippery slope, right? Because if you let one person do it, you have to let every person do it, or at least arbitrate that individual. And they might not be prepared to do that. So, I mean, it sucks. And, you know, but to your point, it was stupid and he shouldn't have,
it's crazy.
He shouldn't have bet $1,500 knowing probably, because I can't imagine the NFL doesn't have it written somewhere. If you gamble on a game, you will be suspended for an entire year or up to this. It lays out, it has to lay that out very specifically, because that'd be an easy legal route for any player to exploit, right? If they did it, well, you didn't lay it out clearly how long. He knew what the rule was. He disobeyed it. It doesn't matter how much he put on it. Doesn't matter. And nothing else matters. He knew what the rule was. He disobeyed it. And it is, as you, and I think that it's one of those like unspoken rules in a way too. You know what I mean? Like that kind of, I don't know, for whatever reason has been given more importance over the years.
Well, that's it for Calvin Ridley's season. And that's it for us talking about the NFL hot topics for the day. It's now time to convert to a completely different sport. For the first time this calendar year, we are getting back into the world of golf. We are talking about the fifth major, the Players Championship, giving out a fast five. Schaefer the Sand Trap returns, a fast five from each of the hosts, and that's coming up next.
West Coast Gamblers.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right, listeners, as we said, we're talking the Players Championship, the fifth major. It's time to talk a little golf. And if you think we're doing this off the cuff, you would be wrong, because I have research for this podcast. I'm very excited about diving back in to the golf world. Dangles, Players Championship, where are we going?
I love it. We're just outside of Jacksonville, technically Ponte Vedra Beach, but it's North Florida, and it is just off the water. And this is, you're going to hear this if you're listening to other podcasts, if you're reading up on the players as we head into this this week. It's all the talk is about the weather. All the talk is about the storm that's blowing. There's like a cold front that's supposed to come in on Sunday, supposed to be windy. And this is like, this is legitimately, boys, there's a road called A1A that runs along the east coast of Florida, along the Atlantic Ocean. It's from top to bottom of Florida. And this course is legitimately right off of that. So you are on the water with this golf course. So you're getting the wind, you're getting and think about the fact that this tournament this year is in March instead of May when it normally is. I know it's Florida and it is warm year round, but it's going to be colder, especially on the water at this time of year, than it would be in May in Florida. So something to keep in mind as you're trying to handicap this field out here. But we do indeed have the Players' Championship at the Stadium Course, designed by Pete Dye at TPC Sawgrass, one of the most beautiful places you'll ever go to watch golf. I think if you're a golf fan, it should be on your golf bucket list to get there. Catch 16, 17, 18. It's one of the best final stretches you'll find on the Pro Tour, 16, 17, 18, that par 5, that par 3, and then you come back around to the seats on that 18th par 4.
Dangs, quickly, as someone who has said, not a golfer, doesn't play a lot of golf, what was your experience like that? What was your experience going there on the grounds? Can you speak to that?
It's
incredible.
It's beautiful. It's such a well-maintained course.
Were you at 17? Did you see 17?
I've seen. Oh. It's just like watching them actually golf there is incredible. I got to see Tiger play a couple of years there, which was incredible. It's, you know, and it's just golf events are fun. If you've never been to a Pro Tour golf event, you should go. The food and beers are not anywhere near as expensive as you'll find at a football stadium or at a baseball stadium. You can kind of just go where you want to go, post up at the holes you like for the golfers that are going to be there. It really allows you to be in control of your sport, a sports experience. But this year's going to be interesting with all this weather, fellas. We got a couple of favorites right now. Justin Thomas and John Rahm are 10-1 favorites as of right now from our friends at DraftKings Sportsbook.
And the numbers only get bigger and bigger.
They do.
That's why
you
gotta love betting golf. We're going to be giving out 5 bets each on this show. All these bets you can take at our friends at DraftKings. And I'm very excited to get into it. I will say personally, my first 2 are more fun bets. My last 3 are guarantees based on the research I've done.
Golfing's easy to bet on.
I cannot wait. But Dangles, let's start off this fast 5. Let's go with you, my friend. Each of us are going to give out 1 bet, rotate it. What's the first bet of the day for the Players' Championship?
Oh, this is a stupid bet, but I'm going to run with it because it's fun and I want to do it. Do you guys know that since 2016 there have been 3 aces on 17 in the Players' Championship? 3 whole aces. That's not easy to do. I'm going to go with yes on hole in one on 17 +250. It's not a terrible number. It's not a great number, but I'm going to go with it. I think there will be a hole in one this year. I just feel like there will be. I don't have any. It's just a gut feeling. I've got it. I'm running with it. Let's do it. Hole in one +250 on DraftKings.
Dangles, I'll go next because mine is a fun prop as well. I was tempted to take, this is a prop on DraftKings. You can take the field versus Justin Thomas, Rahm, Rory, and Morikawa. As Dangles said, top 4 on the board. That foursome's getting +330 to win it all. Didn't take that one, though, although I looked at it long and hard. The other prop I'm going to take and the first bet for my Fast 5, will the winner of the tournament be in the final pairing on the final day? I'm saying no at +200. No at +200, meaning any other person in the world heading into the final day is not in the final 2, wins the actual tournament in the end. Let's go with a no. It's my first bet. Shave of the sharp.
Well, boys, usually I have a whole list of notes. I've been prepping for years, months, days, hours. I've been working 16-hour days in L.A. for the last 5 days, but I have bet more on golf up to this point than any other time in my life. I am prepped. This is a little bit in real time, boys, and I'm going to tell you right now. My first bet, just saw it. I love it. I'm going to play a top 40. As you guys know, my sweet spot. I've hit 2 outright winners this year to this point. Joaquin Niemann and my man Tom never makes a bogey. Hoagie, he is a premium ball striker, a flusher, as we call it. We're going to go Tom Hoagie, top 40 at
Tony,
+160.
You look distraught, Tony Squares.
What's your second bet, Tony?
Did he steal your bet?
Well, this sucks. We end this show, when we do the Fast 5, we end this show with the backup the Brinks truck bet of the week. The guarantee, the one that we nailed.
That is not what I'm
going to
be
going
having
to be
week.
Absolute guaranteed. And I have research to back it up. I'll get into the research later, but I'm going to jump the gun. My 5th bet and my 2nd bet given on the show, my backup the Brinks truck bet, is Tom Hoagie to be top 40 at +160. Listen, I have research to back it up. I'm going to tell Drew about it later.
Great.
But all I can tell you right now before I get to that research is don't Google image search Tom Hoagie, because you'll take away all confidence you have in the man. Just know that this bet is going to hit. Tom Hoagie, top 40, is my second bet of the day. Jumping the gun, Drew. Great bet. Great way to start it off. Out of all the fucking golfers of the world to do anything in the tournament, we both have Tom Hoagie plus 40. Dangles, what's your second bet of the day?
My second bet, I'm also going to do a top 40 bet, but I'm going to bet on Justin Rose to finish in the top 40. This guy is a wily old vet who always seems to find his way into the upper echelon of some of these. And this isn't even a major. This is the quote-unquote fifth major. But I went back and actually looked at some of his past showings at majors. Tied for eighth at the 2021 PGA Championship, ninth at the 2020 PGA Championship, tied for third at the 2019 U.S. Open, tied for second at the 2018 Open Championship. This guy shows up when the lights are bright on the big courses, and he's played this course a bunch over his career. Justin Rose always seems to find a way into the conversation somehow. I'm going to bet him to finish in the top 40 at plus 140.
Drew, what's your second bet, and please don't take one of mine.
All right, I'm going to go top 20, okay? I'm going to go to a Florida native that just had it kind of a little bit of a choke fest in the Honda Classic, was at a five-stroke lead and lost it, did not win. But Danny Berger is in excellent form, and he's a Florida guy, and he's a great wind player. And Dangles, you referenced the weather earlier. If this guy is an immaculate wind, rain player, and he loves this course, has had great results there. Danny Berger, Berger boy, plus 175, top 20. That's my guy, Florida State alum, Danny Berger, top 20.
Dangles, back to you, bet number three.
Bet number three, I'm also going to do a top 20. I'm going to go Hideki Matsuyama to finish in the top 20 at plus 120. I don't have much to say about this other than he's been in great form. We know what he can do. He's a Masters winner. And I feel pretty good about taking the 11th ranked golfer in the world to finish in the top 20 here this weekend. I'm going to go with Hideki Matsuyama, top 20 finish, plus 120.
All right, last fun bet I'm going to give out. I did this five times last golf season. It's the nationality bet. I went 4-1 in my nationality bets. This one, we're going to Scotland, and we're going to a man named Russell Knox versus a man named Martin Laird. Listen, Martin Laird won me a good one last year. I'm doing it again. Yeah. Martin Laird
why not?
To beat Kevin Knox. Martin Laird to beat Russell Knox as the best Scot in the Players' Championship at plus 110. That's my third bet of the day. Let's go, Marty.
It wouldn't be a pod without Schaefer the God, I can't say that. Schaefer the Sand Trap. I'm going to piggyback off your nationality bet, Tony, because I have one of my own. If you remember when Schaefer the Sand Trap debuted, he had his low Asian. It did not hit. So we're going to get a little more specific. We're going low South Korean, and my guy, Sungjae Im, is plus 100. He only has to beat two competitors, Siwoo Kim, who is a former champ, mind you, yep, at 250-1 when he won, and K.H. Lee at plus 310, who is also a great golfer in his own right. But Sungjae, we'll hear all the time. This is an approach course, tiny greens. He's one of the best iron players in the world. Miscut at Honda, but bounced back nice last week. I have Sungjae Im, low South Korean, plus 100.
I will say Sungjae Im, if we were doing a fast six, Sungjae Im top 20 at plus 200 was my sixth bet. It was the last bet I cut off of this list. I love Sungjae Im. Also has to do with the research I did, which I will get to as soon as Dangles gives us his fourth bet of the day.
My fourth bet of the day, I'm going to go with a matchup bet here, fellas. I'm going to go with a guy who has played this course a lot. I believe he's played 22 events here over the course of his career. Now, the guy who I'm matching him up against is getting a lot of talk coming into this. I've heard his name come up in a lot of discussions about this, or about the Players' Championship and that he's going to play well. But I am taking Sergio Garcia over Matthew Fitzpatrick in this matchup at plus 120. Sergio Garcia has 22 events on this course. He's finished top 25 in 11 of them, including the last two that he's played at TPC Sawgrass. He knows this course very well. I think he finished like second or third last year. Recently at the Players, he had an incredible finish. He knows this course well. He's going to play it well. I've got
Sergio?
Yeah, Sergio.
Oh, he's a past winner, obviously.
Yeah, I've got him over Matt Fitzpatrick, plus 105. I know that's probably not where the sharp money is going. I know a lot of people like Matthew Fitzpatrick, but I'm going with experience here. I'm taking Sergio at plus 105 over Matthew Fitzpatrick.
So I did some digging on this Players Championship, as it is the first golf pod we're doing on the calendar year. And this was a tweet sent out by a dude that I forget the name of, and I don't really care to give him credit because he's not listening to the pod. But four things about this Players Championship. 9 of the last 11 winners had a T4 or better in the calendar year leading up to the Players Championship. 14 of the last winners, 14 straight, were 23rd or better in the last year's Players Championship. The last 5 winners were plus 22 in their last start on the tour, and the last 10 all made the cut on their last start of the tour. So, I did some research. Out of the calendar year, I wrote down everyone who had a T4 finish so far this year and then played it against those other 3 stats. Only one man has done all 4. Only one man fits the bill for all 4 of these, and that's the best player in the world, Jon Rahm. But 3 men have 3 of these and came very close to getting that 4th. One of them, Tom Hoagie, which we already talked about. I already gave out, as Drew did, plus 160 to finish top 40. The other two are going to be my final 2 bets. The first one, Will Zalatoris. The only thing he missed out is the last time he played, he was T39. No, I'm sorry. He was T38 instead of being T23. But he has all the other qualifications to make this work. And I'm playing a matchup bet, and it involves, Dangles, the 2 golfers you just mentioned, Sergio Garcia, Matthew Fitzpatrick. Will Zalatoris to beat them both at plus 180 is my 4th bet of the day, and we'll save my backup the Brinks truck bet that's not Tom Hoagie afterwards because it's a man that also fits the bill. By the way, Drew, Sungjae Im fits 3 of those as well. So that's why I like Sungjae, and he was just cut. Drew, what's your 4th bet?
Oh, guys, I knew this was going to be a problem. I'm trying to do this in real time. I'm going to do it. Even though this is part of my 5, this is what we like to call a long shot. This is a big ticket. This is bet a dollar to make a bill. A Washington for a C note. 100-1, we're going to go first round leader. I'm going to borrow from our great friend Diamond Dave here. And the first round leader at 100-1, Mr. Brian Harman, and I'll tell you why I like him specifically. Yes, he has great course history. Yes, he's in decent form. But would you believe he's the first tee time out on Thursday, and typically, most of the time, the weather's a little calm in the morning, and then it maybe picks up as the day goes. So he shot 66 3 times or less here in the first round the last like 10 years. Let's just throw a long shot out. Let's go 100-1.
100-1.
Brian Harman, first round leader. Let's go, Harmy.
And after that 100-1 bet, it's time to back up the motherfucking Brinks truck. Dangles, your 5th bet of the day of the final Fast 5. What do you got for the Players' Championship?
All right, I'm going back to the nationality bet. We got a slightly larger field here, but I feel good about this one. And Drew Shaver the Sharp, I know you like this guy. I'm going to go with Cam Smith to be the top Australian.
I hate Cam Smith.
At plus 225. It is a short field. There's like 8 guys involved, but it's a short field. Adam Scott's the only golfer with better odds at 2-1, and he's currently ranked 34th in the world. Cam Smith, meanwhile, is 10th in the world and has 2 top 5 finishes in his last 4 events. He's a good putter. He's coming into this event with good form recently. I've got him over Adam Scott as the top Australian, plus 225. I think the next closest guy is Mark Leishman at plus 450, and then Jason Day at plus 550. I like Cam to be the top Aussie here, plus 225.
Top Aussie. My backup, the Brinks truck bet of the day, that's not Tom Hoagie, T40, which is my actual backup, the Brinks truck. But I'll go with another bet that I like that fits the bill, the 4 qualifications I gave you earlier. The only one he doesn't fit is his last start. He tied for 39th in that, but he hits all the other ones. And this is a man that I bet on last year quite a bit, and he won me almost every time, including the first ever nationality bet I did. And that's Abraham Anser in his matchup bet over Tyler Gooch. Drew's making a face. He doesn't like Abraham Anser, or he doesn't like this bet at all. But Tyler Gooch, listen, it's plus 100 for Anser. And Tyler Gooch, to me, I just had to bet a guy with the last name of Gooch. What's wrong? Is he dead? Did he pull a hammy? What's wrong with the answer?
On my life, I don't have these written down. On my life, on my son's name, my backup, the Brinks truck bet, was going to be Abe Answer over Taylor Gooch.
Taylor Gooch.
Not Tyler Gooch. Taylor Gooch.
We can't do it. It's Taylor Heineke, Tyler Heineke.
I was looking at the matchups. It was, I went through all of them. I love Abe Answer. So I'm gonna give you a strong like fist bump, Tony. I will not make that my back of the Brinks truck. I love that bet. Great job. Abe Answer over Taylor Gooch. I love it. Give me about 5 seconds here.
I will say after Drew gives out his new backup the Brinks truck bet on the fly, we will be giving out some winners, some guaranteed winners, some long shot winners, because again, as Dangle said at the beginning, even the favorite in this is +1,000. So if you throw some money on a winner, you never know what could hit. Might as well try it. We have some selections for you here. But again, Drew, finish us off. Fast five, backup the Brinks truck. What do you got?
No, this is good, because I actually did some digging in about 7 seconds. I really like this one. I'm going to go Jordan Spieth. Pretty good player, right? Nice name brand. Tommy Fleetwood, he's kind of the sexy like stack guy. Would you believe, guys, his tournament matchup, Jordan Spieth versus Tommy Fleetwood, is -110? That doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I will make my official backup the Brinks truck bet after a strong, 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 just love Tony's hoagie, or love his hoagie and love his Father Abraham answer. Back up the Brinks truck, Jordan Spieth over Tommy Fleetwood, -110. Let's go. Players' Championship, fifth major. We love it.
We love golf.
The winners will give out. I'll go first. Listen, I know he is the favorite, but as I said with my research, no one in the world hit all four of these qualifications except for John Rahm. +1,000 is still a 10-to-1 fucking bet. That ain't bad if you throw $10, win $100 on the best player in the goddamn world, John Rahm, to win. And if you want a longer shot, I really like Sungjae Im, and it's 50-to-1 for him to come back and win this Players' Championship. As Drew said, he has the game for it. I love Sungjae Im at 50-to-1. Dangles, you got a winner for us?
I mean, I don't think I listened to a podcast or read an article that did not mention Colin Morikawa coming into this. Everyone is on him. I'm not going to bet on Colin Morikawa, because the fact that he's so popular scares me the fuck away from him. Instead, I kind of like, I don't know, I mean, he's got four out of five top 10 finishes this year, and 4 out of 5 events, I should say. Patrick Cantlay. This guy's got to bring home an event at some point, right? Like, I know you don't like him, Drew.
He only won the FedEx in the 2 playoff events last year, so he's doing fine.
He's a 20-to-1. Yeah, he's 20-to-1 odds. And I mean, if you look back at the history of the Players, this is a tournament that churns out some odd winners, like, you know what I mean? Like Martin Keimer, Henrik Stenson, Fred Funk won it 1 year. You know what I mean? Like there are some odd Ricky Fowler, like there's some weird Siwoo Kim, as you mentioned, there's some odd winners.
Ricky Fowler ain't winning it this year again.
I don't think so. No. So, you know, if you're going to go weird, this is actually a good tournament to do. We also haven't talked about Victor Hovland yet, who's the third-ranked golfer in the world. He's +2,200.
You know who else we haven't talked about? What if Phil Mickelson's odd to win this Players' Championship?
Bagel.
Yeah, I thought so. Drew, you got any winners for us?
Yeah, I do. So, Dangles, I like first of all, Tony, I like your research about Rahm, and I love your pick about Cantlay, and I love your intuitiveness about Morikawa. But I think those three guys, as you said, Dangs, like, this is like literally picking straws. Like
anybody could win this.
This tournament specifically doesn't go necessarily on past performance. There's been winners that's missed cuts, even like current play. It's really hard. In fact, I went on a podcast last year. I think I gave 7 picks, and if I'm not mistaken, I don't think I did very well. But I will say, the one guy that no one talked about until I started kind of making the rounds today on the old podcast circuit, there's $3.6 million awarded to this winner of this tournament. There's a $20 million purse in this tournament. I think last place gets like 64 grand. I think the top like 10 get over $500,000 or something stupid.
Thanks, Tiger Woods.
And Yeah, thank you, Tiger. And there's one guy that's known for only caring about majors. He only cares about majors. And he happens to be from Florida.
Is it Phil Mickle? Oh, wait a minute.
No, no. He's from Arizona. and he happens to be from Florida. And no one's really talking about him that much. And I looked on my odds board right here. And wouldn't you know it? He's like not even on the first page. If you can get Brooks Koepka for 35-1 in a tournament of this stature, you have to take him. I don't care if he misses the cut. I don't care if he WDs after the first hole. You have to take him. Because I guarantee one thing, Brooks gives a shit about this tournament, even though it's not a major. And it's his home state, and he wants to fucking win. He likes money. He likes trophies. Give me Brooks Koepka, 35-1, to win the Players' Championship. Let's go. Can't wait.
I'm excited to watch this tournament. And that is all for the West Coast Gamblers, the first in-person recording for over 2 years. Very happy it happened. Hopefully it happens again in the future, maybe even Michigan next time, so we can all actually make the bets that we're giving out on this show.
Yes.
But for Matthew Dangles, D'Angelo Antonio, for Schaefer the Sand Trap, Drew Schaefer Crookston, my name is Tony Cavallo. We are the West Coast Gamblers, and as always, thank you for listening. All right.
Dub C to the G, West Coast Gamblers.
I'm Bruce Martin, host of Pit Pass Indy. Each week, I go behind the scenes of the NTT IndyCar Series and introduce our listeners to the biggest stars of IndyCar, which features the Indianapolis 500 as its cornerstone event. The men and women that compete in IndyCar may be the bravest athletes in all of sport, as danger lurks around every corner. They are able to look danger in the eye without flinching. That is why the NTT IndyCar Series features the best racing on the planet. Join me every week as we talk to the stars of IndyCar, including the legends of the Indianapolis 500, on Pit Pass Indy from Evergreen Podcast.